Hello, my spooky friends. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that inspired pop culture movies and shows we know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and today we're going to be talking about the LGBTQ+ Bonnie and Clyde, Nathan Leopold, and Richard Loeb, and how their crimes inspired Missing Numbers to be made. Like majority of our cases, this movie is loosely based off the crimes committed by these murderous lovers, but I mostly watched it for the plot, and who can resist Sandra Bullock? I mean, come on. Listener's discretion is advised. Nathan Leopold was born on November 19, 1904, in Chicago, Illinois, to parents Florence and Nathan Leopold. They were a wealthy German-Jewish immigrant family. Now, Nathan was a child prodigy who graduated from the University of Chicago at 18. He spoke 9 languages and had an IQ of 200. And was planning to begin studies at Harvard Law School after a trip to Europe. He also achieved a measure of national recognition as an ornithologist, which is like a study of birds. Nathan and several other ornithologists identified the Kirtland's warbler and made astute observations about the parasitic nesting behavior of brown-headed cowbirds, which threatened the warblers. Richard Loeb was born on June 11, 1905, in Chicago, to a family of Anna Henrietta and Albert Henry Loeb, a wealthy lawyer and retired vice president of Sears, Roebuck & Company. Oh yeah, that's Sears. Like Nathan, Richard was exceptionally intelligent. With the encouragement of his governess, he skipped several grades in school and became the University of Michigan's youngest graduate at just 17. And he was fascinated with criminal psychology. The two knew each other casually growing up, and in the mid-1920s, their relationship flourished and the two men became lovers. The two made a highly unusual pact. Richard, who was indeed gay, agreed to participate in Leopold's eccentric sexual practices in return for Leopold's cooperation with his criminal endeavors. Leopold introduced his boyfriend to the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche's concept of supermen, interpreting them as transcendent individuals possessing extraordinary and unusual capabilities, whose superior intellects allowed them to rise above the laws and rules that bound the unimportant. Basically making it that they are better than everyone else because they have a high IQ, therefore making it okay to do any crime they wanted. Now, discussing the theory turned them both on, and they made an agreement that they would push the limits and see how much they could get away with. The couple began their crime spree by first petty theft, committing vandalism and arson. They even broke into a fraternity house at the University of Michigan, where they stole penknives, a camera, and a typewriter that would be used in a ransom note shortly after they stole it. Richard and Nathan began to get disappointed by the lack of media coverage for the crimes they committed, so they decide to kick it up a notch, and they planned to execute the perfect crime that would guarantee them media attention as well as the status of supermen. The murder. Nathan, who was 19 at the time, and Richard, who was 18, each established false identities and began rehearsing the kidnapping and the murder, and decided it would be much more sensational if they kidnapped a teenager. They thought a teen would definitely sell the papers, and even though they knew they wouldn't get credit for the murder, they still liked the fact that it'd be like their own little secret that could bond them together for life. Both of them, being from wealthy families, decided to go for a teen who was the same status as them, rich. So they decided to kidnap Richard's second cousin, 14-year-old Robert or Bobby Franks. Bobby Franks was the wealthy son of Jacob Franks, who was a watch manufacturer, so the boys knew that he'd make the perfect target. On May 21st, 1924, Nathan and Richard put their plan in motion. Nathan, using his fake name of Morton D. Ballard, rented a car and offered to walk Bobby home. He refused at first since he was only walking about 2 blocks away, but his cousin Richard convinced him to get in under false pretenses of discussing a tennis racket that he lent Bobby use. He got in the front seat and eagerly started to tell his cousin about the tennis racket. Now, this is where the debate comes in. There's debate about this. Richard stabbed Bobby several times in the head with a chisel, then dragged him in the back seat and gagged him, where he died as Leopold drove through Chicago's heavy traffic. They placed his body on the floor of the rented car and went into their arranged dump spot, which was near Wolf Lake in Hammond, Indiana, which was roughly 25 miles south of Chicago. At night, they disposed of Bobby's bloody clothes, then spread more evidence along the Pennsylvania Railroad tracks north of the lake. To make sure no one found out the identity of the boy, they poured hydroclonic acid on the face and the genitals. By the time the two men returned to Chicago, word was already spreading that Bobby Franks was missing. Nathan then called Bobby's mother under the name of George Johnson and told her that her son had been kidnapped and told her instructions for his ransom would be coming soon. After they mailed the typed ransom note, the couple burned their blood-soaking clothes, cleaned the stains in the rented car, and then spent the rest of the night just playing cards. See? Totally casual. We've been playing cards all night. Now, knowing the Franks would receive the letter in the morning, Nathan called a second time and dictated the first set of instructions for the ransom payment. Nathan and Richard would never get a chance to collect that $10,000 because they made a few mistakes. First, the body, which was poorly hidden, was discovered the next day by someone who was jogging past Bobby Frank's burial site, saw his body, and called the police.
Strike one.
And the boys disposed of the typewriter they used for the ransom note, and they tossed it near a lake, which was discovered. And the biggest mistake of all, the biggest and dumbest mistake, a pair of glasses was found near Bobby's body. Now you're probably thinking, no big deal, they didn't have DNA testing back then. Which you'd be correct. But the glasses found were fitted with an unusual hinge purchase by only 3 customers in Chicago, one of whom was Nathan, who calmly told detectives, I must have dropped them while I was bird hunting earlier in the week. Silly me, I've been looking for those. It did not help the fact that Nathan was also talking to the police beforehand, offering theories to anyone who would listen. He also told the detective that if I were to murder anybody, it would be such a cocky little son of a bitch as Bobby Franks. Like, dude, for a dude with such a high IQ, you are acting like a grade A dumbass.
Confession.
On May 29th, the couple was brought in for questioning. They told the police that on the night of the murder, they picked up 2 women in Chicago with Nathan's car, then dropped them off near a golf course later, but forgot to get their names. Forgot them.
Worst alibi ever.
Their alibi was exposed when Nathan's own chauffeur told police that he was fixing his car at the time they claimed to have used it.
Busted.
Richard was the first to confess, and of course he turned the blame on Nathan, saying he planned the entire thing and he's the one who killed Bobby while Richard drove. Nathan confessed not too long after, and he insisted that Richard was the murderer. Their crime had been uncovered and solved in less than 10 days, and both boys admitted that they were driven by their thrill-seeking Superman delusions and their aspiration to commit a perfect crime. Well, for 2 highly intelligent people who wanted to commit a perfect crime, they sure as hell fucked this up. Neither claimed to have looked forward to the killing, but Nathan admitted interested in learning what it would feel like to be a murderer. He was disappointed to note that he never felt the same.
Yeah, as one usually, I hope, would feel after killing an innocent person for no reason at all.
The trial. Clarence Darrow, who was known to be a thorough defense attorney and could usually get his clients acquitted, agreed to defend the boys, and the trials soon became a national sensation. Darrow, who didn't argue the boys' innocence, directed one of his most famous orations against the death penalty itself. On the advice of Darrow, Nathan and Richard pleaded guilty in front of a judge, John Caverly. Darrow felt that it would be easier for him to convince the judge not to sentence the boys to death than it would be to convince 12 jurors not to. The state attorney, Robert Crowe, kept his argument short, arguing the nature of the crime and law ordered the judge to hand down the death sentence. Like, no, they need the death sentence. Darrow made a 12-hour-long plea to spare the lives of the two young men and to do away with the death sentence altogether. God, can you imagine being on that jury listening to him for 12 freaking hours? Oof. On September 10th, 1924, 3 months after the murder of Bobby Frank, Judge Caverly made his ruling and sentenced both Nathan and Richard to life in prison and an additional 99 years for the kidnapping, and both of them were sent to Gillette Prison. The ordeal broke Nathan and Richard up for good, obviously. While neither admitted to being with the other, there is evidence to suggest their love was deep and passionate. On January 28, 1936, Richard Loeb was attacked by a fellow inmate, James Day, with a straight razor in the shower. And despite prison doctors trying to save him, he died of more than 50 wounds and had his throat slashed from behind. On March 13, 1958, after 33 years, Nathan Leopold was paroled and released from prison. He moved to Puerto Rico and picked up his studying of birds and worked on a social work degree from the University of Puerto Rico. Nathan met and married a Gertrude or Trudy Feldman Garcia, where he lived out the rest of his life. And on August 30th, 1971, Nathan died in a hospital in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Throughout the years, the tale of Leopold and Loeb have been kept alive and inspired works of film, books, and theater, including Alfred Hitchcock's film Rope, a fictionalized story in the third season of The Sinner, and Murders by Numbers starring Ryan Gosling and Sandra Bullock, which was all inspired off these couples' crimes. And that concludes today's episode. Rest in peace to poor Bobby Frank. Thank you guys so much for joining me. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and don't forget to tune in next week for a new All Things Murder, if you dare. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget to check out my TikTok at Sinister Marissa.